Welcome to the fire.
Welcome to the fire, boys. My name is Parker McDonald.
And I'm Walter Lee, and we'll be your hosts on this episode of the Southern Collective Hunting Podcast. If you're a new hunter trying to learn the basics,
or you're a veteran woodsman just trying to get through your workday, there's always a place at our campfire for you.
Speaking of the fire, we would love it if you guys would join our growing Patreon community and be a part of the best and only digital deer camp south of Mason-Dixon Line.
Come on. If you'd like to learn more, click on the link in the show notes. But for now, Walt,
welcome to the fire. All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Southern Collective Podcast. My name is Walt, and I am joined by the JB Special and P. Dizzle McDee's, two legendary turkey co-hosts in the world here. I've got Joey Bell and Parker McDonald. Boys, we're doing something fun tonight. We're doing something we haven't done before, at least as a group. We haven't really done this before. I think probably, Parker, you and I have done some rendition of this over time. But one of my favorite podcasts out there is Ron Spomer Outdoors. I don't know if either of you know who Ron Spomer is.
Mm-hmm.
But it feels like you have a guy with a collective knowledge of 1,000 men when it comes to rifles, and all his podcast is just Patreon and listener submitted questions, and you get to hear that knowledge as you go. And so I don't remember whose idea this was, but Joey, you have been collecting questions from the Patreon community for you and Parker to answer, and I'm going to be color commentary here because I think of the three of us, I'm the least people want to hear from, given I'm so very new to this. So, gentlemen, as we record this, we are under 25 days from our Patreon hunt, our spring turkey hunt here in Florida. We are getting close.
Feels like we just had our deer hunt.
We did.
Like just the other day. I feel like I just shot a deer not that long ago. And then I was paying some bills earlier today. No, I did shoot a deer. Yes. And shot at a deer, but I also did kill one too.
Yeah.
Forget about that. But I was paying some bills. I don't know if y'all do this. I do this all the time. Like when I pay a bill and I'm like, oh man, I'm not going to have to pay that bill until turkey season has already started.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm do you ever do that?
Yeah.
Or are you like, oh, next time I pay this bill, I'll probably have already killed a turkey. You know, like, so well, I paid some bills like that today and I was like, oh man, it's close. It's getting here.
I think, I forget which podcast we talked about it on, but it's like, I selfishly think about how every life decision affects turkey season. You know, mm-hmm. Remember me talking about that? It's like it could be something that happens in November, which to y'all, you know, for whitetail hunters would be an absolute huge deal. It's not that big a deal for me, but it's still like the instant somebody brings up some kind of event that I need to attend in whatever month, like November, December, September, whatever, my immediate thought is like, okay, how does this affect turkey season? That's like the first step. And mm-hmm. if I can answer that, okay, it doesn't affect turkey season at all. It's 7 months away. Okay, we're past that. And then I can go on with, you know, my decision-making process. But it's like literally always the first step. It doesn't matter what time of year it is. I don't know what – it's something wrong with me.
It's not March. It's not March, April, or May.
Right.
We're good.
Yeah, we're good. We're golden.
It didn't used to be May. May used to be like – May used to honestly be like, okay, I'm done with everything by May. I'm good. And then I started traveling out west.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's like, I mean, May, you can hunt all month, you know? You can hunt the whole month. That's a turkey month.
Yeah. And our in Tennessee season got pushed back, you know, a couple weeks. So we're hunting into, you know, Memorial Day weekend. And but the bad thing is we only got two tags. So you've got like 6 weeks to fill two tags. If you kill
that's
one,
so easy to do in Tennessee.
It's easier in Kentucky. but if you're lucky enough, you know, to get, you know, get a turkey in April, I mean, you're done. I mean, you're done, you know, for 4 weeks that other people are hunting and you're not. So it's, I don't know. It's a tricky situation. It, it makes you, it does make you go out, you know, out of state. Like you go out west and there's so much good turkey hunting in May. Like that first week of May, even in Tennessee, like a couple of weeks before season would end was like excellent turkey hunting. And then when they, I have never hunted past Mother's Day, I don't think, because sometimes it would end on Mother's Day, you know, closing in the middle of May. But I don't think I've ever hunted in Tennessee in late May. It sounds kind of miserable, but I wouldn't mind doing it.
It is. Don't do it.
It's not worth it. It is not fun. No. Oh, okay. I'm going to rephrase everything.
It's funner in Tennessee.
Yeah, it's funner in Kentucky.
That's what I'd say. Dead gummit.
No, it is fun to hunt turkeys in May. Don't get me wrong. Out west, it's way fun because the weather is nice. You know, it's just starting to get warm and green out west. We actually hunted Tennessee this last year. Our last hunt was in Tennessee, me and you, Walt. Mm-hmm. And that was like it felt like we were hunting them in the summertime. Like it literally felt like summertime. We woke up that morning, it was humid, hot, freaking mosquitoes are going everywhere. And you're like, this is just not turkey hunting season.
Nope.
Like it just shouldn't be. But that's down south, down, you know, out west. I highly encourage people to travel. If you're going to travel in May, because there are places where it is much more beautiful in May than it is out here. It's for dang sure. But it's close, man. It's getting here. It's like for these for those South Florida dudes, it's going to be like they're like cleaning their guns now. You know, they're getting ready.
What's funny is, Joey, you talk about how everything impacts like decisions. And realistically, I started trading when I started thinking about places that I can hunt elsewhere. So like my wife is like, hey, so there's this wedding, you know, we haven't been to a wedding in a while and I've only got like one single friend left. She's like, it's the first week of it, or like the second week of April. And I'm like, she has a moratorium on me hunting past May 7th, which is her birthday. But if I have to give up a weekend, that means I can go somewhere in the month of May. So the other day I was like, well, we'll see about it. I've already decided I'm going back to Tennessee. Like I'm going somewhere there where the season's open in May, and I'm gonna be like, hey, listen, you took one of my 6 weeks. Like I'm taking one back, you know? And so, yeah, I'm right there with you, man. My buddy got pregnant in, 9 months from March. And he was like, hey, yeah, I know. And so they're always,
I don't know if it's crazier that your buddy got pregnant or the rest of the story.
I can have wild female friends, Parker. Jeez, it's 2024. But he's like, yeah, so she's going to be born the first week of March. I like look at him, or in early March, I just kind of look at him. He's like the first week, dude, you're okay. I was like, all right, because I ain't going to be there. I ain't missing the opener for your kid's birthday party. I'm sorry. It's not happening.
Just stop acting like I've learned to just stop acting like I'm worried that I'm going to miss something. Like when people are like, oh, can you come to this? Like, instead of being like, oh man, I got a turkey hunt. It's like, nah, I can't be there.
Got a point. Cool. You said it, you know? Just like that. Is that, you know, how you said, like, it in the past? Oh man, I got a turkey hunt. Otherwise I'd be there.
Yeah. When I worked at the church, absolutely. I was like, oh man, can't be there. Man, I got to be on a turkey hunt. I'm sorry. I can't sing at your wedding.
Sorry, I got plans.
Sorry, can't sing at your mama's funeral. Oh, you know. But now I'm just like, oh,
being
you know,
in turkey season, I don't know what her problem
is. Yeah.
Yeah, dude. Just stop acting worried about it. Then people will be like, that guy is a douchebag. I don't even want him to come to my stuff. I'm going to stop inviting him.
Well, the way I looked at it for a long time is that if you have a wedding in April, like dead heart of turkey season. If you have an event in April, you either know me well enough that I'm not invited anyway, or you just know I'm not going to come and you don't care if I come or not. So that's the way I look at things anymore.
And it's getting so much now to where your seasons are overlapping so much that it's kind of like, I've got 2 months that you can invite me to come to things, and those are going to be for sure yeses. It's got to be in those 2 months though. Otherwise, if it's August, if it's pretty much August through May, I'm out.
And with show season, that's starting to eat into those 2 months as well.
Yeah.
You're going to have like 2 weeks. Well, I mean, I guess that's a fun way to tease that. You want to tell everybody the big news? Or do you want them to
Wait? I mean, I wasn't prepared. No, really, I'm not prepared.
Obviously, Parker wasn't prepared.
I feel like
prepared.
This is the movie Ted. It's like, I wasn't ready for a follow-up question.
No, I mean, yeah, it's not. I didn't know this was something that you announced, honestly. You know, like there's some things that you announce and then some things you just don't. This feels like something you don't announce until you get like way closer.
I think it's a big deal because people have been asking for us to go and do live shows and do some of this. So I think this is worth telling people, but we can bury the lead now and just be a big tease.
Well, maybe you could just use this as the teaser now.
And, there it is.
You know, people are just going to be wondering even more when this very big announcement is going to come. Because now we've just.
It's not that big, though.
But it is now. We've done teased it enough. It's a big announcement now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, but this is
the ultimate letdown.
We've made it.
We're
a
doing
big
a
deal.
Trade show in 6 months.
In the last 90 seconds, we've made it a big deal.
Y'all have heard of under promise and over deliver. We just over promised and under delivered big time.
We got freaking massive news, the biggest news we've had.
It's a game changer.
Since our birth.
It's essentially an iPhone update.
5 months ago. Not even a new iPhone model.
Yeah,
you know, it's not even a new model. It's just a new update. Software update.
We got a new emoji. We got to get rolling here. We've gone off the rails entirely.
Somebody somewhere was having a crappy day on the way to work and started playing this with such high hopes.
Oh, we just made it worse.
Oh, God. Well, all right, moving along.
So we got some questions, right, from Patreon members that we need to answer.
Yeah. We wanted to do like a calling and like tactical turkey episode. And honestly, this is like legit one of my favorite episodes to even listen to, you know, when I've listened to other podcasts in the past. I think, you know, Turkey Hunt has so much good storytelling potential, and there's just infinite amounts of good stories in Turkey Hunt. But I think, I don't know, I think the tactical stuff lately, I don't know, the last few years, it almost seems like it's taken a backseat. To me, anyway. Like, there's a lot more storytelling going on, and we love telling stories. Love hearing turkey stories, love telling turkey stories. But I love even more somebody how to tell me how they've killed a turkey and what I can do to replicate that. And I think it's kind of what we're going to do tonight. We've got a handful of questions from some of the Patreons. Just, like I said, focus more or less around calling, but it's, I mean, we're going to go down a couple rabbit holes, I'm sure, not just calling and you know, setups and how to approach a roost, whatever, you name it. So that's kind of where we're going tonight.
Yeah, and I think you hit the nail on the head. There's no way you can talk about how you would call without talking about your setup and the terrain and the temperature of the bird and all those different things. So I think I will, like, my leading thing I just want to tell people is, I think whenever you're hearing, be prepared to be flexible mentally when you apply it, because there might be 3 points from 4 different questions that all apply to one scenario in real life. So just be mentally flexible, and like, don't think, okay, that bird's hung up and I hear hens, they said fill in the blank. Like, just kind of slowly analyze your situation as you try to apply these, because I think that's the hardest thing, is taking what you hear on the audio waves that's non-visual and then apply it to a very visceral in-person experience.
Yeah, there are no absolutes, especially in turkey hunting. And the answer that is the reply, or that's the reply to so many questions, is it depends. And that's just because there's so many variables that happen in the turkey woods. Because you have the human element, you have the, you know, the wild animal element, you have the weather, you have terrain. It just all depends. But, I mean, though, and the best the best you can do is just provide an example of just what worked for you. I mean, what worked for me may not ever work for somebody else, but I mean, they may could take something from it.
All right, let's roll with question number one, Joey. What you got?
So this first question was from Trent. He says, I normally have birds on my property and they're fairly predictable to a degree of where they're going to roost. But where they are going from there is a toss up. I never can get them to come to me. They always seem to go the other way. I want to take a stab at it, or
Joey, did you by chance see the screenshot he put into Discord as well of the area he's talking about?
I did, and I'll bring it back up. Give me 1 second.
Yeah.
Y'all keep rolling, but I'll bring it up.
I guess in the meantime, I'll talk about a couple of situations, a couple scenarios that I had that I can think of, public land and private land situations. If anybody has watched old Southern ground hunting videos, they have probably seen or heard me talk about a white turkey that I killed in Tennessee like 4 years ago. It wasn't that particular bird, but there was another bird on that hunt that I had hunted. I hunted him every single day that I was there in Tennessee. And it was like, no matter what he did or no matter what I did, he went the opposite direction. And what I had just pretty much narrowed it down to was it had to be my access, because he was literally doing the opposite of me every single time for 9 days in a row. No, that's a stretch. 7 days in a row. I didn't find him until probably a couple days into that hunt. 7 days in a row he did that. And I think it had to do with my access. So that's one thing that I would look at. Turkeys are dumber than we give them credit for sometimes, and they're also smarter than we give them credit for sometimes. And I think when it comes to how you access and being able to be seen, can that turkey see you from when he, especially when he's at that vantage point, can he see you? You know, that is a huge part of it. I also think that my immediate response to Trent in that situation, like the first thing I would do is to just go and not make a sound. Just see what he does, just naturally.
Mm-hmm.
I pulled up his screenshot, and I'll somewhat describe the property to the best of my ability. But it looks like he's got a corner of timber. I can't see the other part of this property, but it's more north and south than it is east to west. And the bottom, I guess, third of this picture of the property, that southeast corner is timber, and the mm-hmm. property line's going north south. And there's also the property line. Is running, I don't know, it looks like maybe 20 yards behind the tree line of a big giant pasture. And he's got his roost sites circled, and they look like they sit almost exactly on his side of the property line. He's got those sites circled. He also has paths. He's got four paths that he said he's seen them travel, you know, in the past. So one path is going north from the top of the two roosts, from the most north of the roost sites. Another path is going northeast from that same roost site. There's another secondary roost site to the south with a pathway going southeast, and another one going directly south. He says, if I sit in the field, they seem to take the woods and vice versa. And I don't know. It's kind of tricky just looking at the picture, because if they're roosting there, I mean, you don't really have their backs against the wall, but they have easy access out of that property. And I almost think, I mean, my first reaction to something like that is I'm going to try and get as close to that turkey as I can without him seeing me. Now, early season may be tricky because it's a forest full of matchsticks, and you're probably not going to be able to get that close to him. But if you can, you know, the closer you can get to him, I think the better the odds are in your favor. And even if you can't get as close to him as you really want to, or as you think you can, I think in that situation, even if he's roosted with hens, I try to be that first hen on the ground. I want to beat all those hens on the ground and let him know that there's a hen down there scratching and waiting on him. And if he's fired up, I'm answering him. If I know where he's at, I'm not going to call to make him gobble. I'm waiting for him to gobble. And then I'm just going to react to him. And may not react to like or respond every time, maybe like every other time, maybe three times, four times, whatever. And just let him know that I'm there. And it's just tree yelps and, you know, whatever else before fly down. And then, like I said, I want to be that first hen on the ground. And then maybe I fly down, quote unquote, fly down probably a little earlier than I should, you know, than a normal turkey would. But I fly down, go to scratching the leaves and just doing, you know, that soft whines and feed calls and just whatever. And I'm still reacting to him, but I'm not like, it's not like when you, when you're watching YouTube and you hear a guy or hear whoever like make a turkey call, turkey gobbles, and he immediately like starts cutting and raising all kinds of cane. In my mind, it's still morning, very early in the morning. Birds are still sleepy. I'm the first hen awake. I'm not cutting him. I'm not blowing the leaves off the trees with cuts and loud stuff. It's just more like he's gobbles and I just go, yep, 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 yep. You know, almost like you would hear a Jake calk, I guess, but just like a soft hen yelp, just like a reactionary yelp, just like you poked her. Yep, 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 yep. And that's all I do. And it's helped me kill a handful of birds over the last few years just by doing that. And it gets them fired up just because just reacting to them, I think, just gets them fired up. And maybe, I mean, I don't know if that was the exact reason that they pitched down and came straight to me or, you know, what the reason was, but that scenario just worked for me those times.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Yeah. dead silence. I think, like you said earlier, Joey, there's the element of this is a wild animal and also the element that it's a wild turkey.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's sometimes no rhyme or reason for a turkey doing what it's doing. I would say, though, that if they are doing the same thing every single time, like it sounds like in this situation that Trent's talking about, go to the other side. You know, like, mm-hmm. like I don't know how far along in this hunt, in this process, Trent specifically is, but for somebody who might not know, I remember there was a time in my life as a turkey hunter, I did not know that, when a turkey gobbled, if he just kept going away from me, I was allowed to go after him. You know, mm-hmm. I was allowed to go and try to set up somewhere not on a green field or somewhere not on a road bed or in the pretty hardwoods, you know, like I was allowed to go and try something a little bit different. And if they keep doing the same thing over and over again, and they're roosting in the same place, then you ain't spooked them yet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not enough. So keep going until they just stop being there. Like, get a little bit closer while they're on the roost. Try something a little bit different. And you'll know when you've gone too far, because they won't be there anymore.
Right.
You'll have pushed them away. But as long as they're there, I'd keep getting closer. But yeah, it's hard to know. It's hard to know without, you know, everybody's going to hear that question differently, and they're going to even apply it differently to their regions and, you know, things like that. Again, access is going to be, in my opinion, when you're talking about like what Trent's talking about here, turkeys on the roost, trying to kill them right at fly down. When you're talking about that, like, number one, it can be a very frustrating game if that is the only way that you're going to hunt turkeys. If you know where they're roosting at every single day, I would also say go try to kill them at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. You know, you might have a better chance at calling them in at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So
that was kind of
that's my take.
That was kind of another question I would ask, you know, after discussing it, I would ask Trent, like, have you seen this property and these turkeys at any other time of day? And it almost sounds like, okay, I hunt these birds at first light, they go these directions, and I don't ever see them again. But we don't know. I mean, there's not as much context as we probably would need. But
sure,
it sounds like they fly off the roost, they go this direction, and the hunt's over for at least, you know, the first half of the day or the morning, and you go.
Well, I think in Kentucky, you're other done options by two, right?
What's that?
In Kentucky, you're done by two, correct?
I don't think so.
I thought I
think
saw
you
that
can hunt all day
episode where they were like up against the clock for 12 or two or something like that. But
I can't keep up with that stuff.
unless
maybe he'll give me a ticket if he needs to.
Yeah.
You know, the one thing I didn't hear, you know, I chatted with Trent about this. The one thing I didn't see him say was where the gobblers were roosted versus the hens, which I thought was an interesting observation or lack mm-hmm. thereof. And it may just be it slipped his mind. But he showed one site that looks like it, maybe it's over water, and that the birds leave from there. I'd be really interested in figuring out where the hens are. Parker, you've hunted the area that I call my honey hole, and it is. There's a couple known roost sites, like really good roost sites in that. And what I found is oftentimes the hens are not right there with the gobblers. And there's a lot of suitable roost trees in that area. And especially when I don't feel like I'm right underneath that tom, there's also kind of a couple known fly down spots as well. And when I feel like I can hear those hens and the tom can't see me, a lot of times I used to fret bumping birds as I got closer and closer. But as I started bumping them, I learned they were hens. Like, I'd see them up in the tree. In fact, I got footage last year of like a hen just sitting there waiting for me to leave. I kind of like bumping the hens because it feels like it shuts them up. They don't do a whole lot of talking. But Trent, if you're listening to this or if you're dealing with a similar circumstance, I'd try and see if the hens are roosting in known locations as well. And you can't cut those hens off from the tom. I called in a bird last year that we ended up getting in between accidentally, we got between the hens and a tom, and the boss hen came in and was pissed at us, got to like 20 yards, couldn't find us, kind of walked off. We ended up getting up thinking they had left and moved like 40 yards. My buddy broke a stick. The tom fires off behind us. And, we literally like crouched down in nothing. There was nothing around us. It was a terrible setup. We had one dead tree in front of us, and it was like that big, you know, like 6 inches laying down. And we ended up killing that bird, I think, because we were close enough to where that other hen was that when we yelped again, his interest was still kind of there. I don't think he was coming to see us per se, so much as the boss hen and I had been going at it for a little while. And we were in between the two, so I think there was some interest there. So that would be my observation, Trent, is try and figure out where those hens are roosted and try and position yourself during the day, if possible, if the tree can't ever let you, between where those hens are talking that morning and that gobbler.
Yep. All right, we'll keep rolling here. Second question from Kyle. He says, scenario,
is this Trucker Hammer Kyle or Snookin? Do you know?
What's that?
Is it Snookin or TK? We have two Kyles.
This is
we actually have three.
We have three Kyles?
Huff, yeah.
Huff, yeah. God, I can't pronounce his entire last. It's like Huff Stutler. I'll Huff butcher Stutler. It. Sorry, Kyle. Hey, Huff. he says, scenario, the birds are hammering on the roost. What calls are you making and how often to keep him entertained? I know you can't do anything when the hens are around and call him off, but what do you do when you don't hear hens, when you don't hear hen calls and he flies down and goes silent? What calls or tactics do you use next?
I feel like he just, in a nutshell, asked, how do you hunt turkeys?
That's a Google search bar. How to hunt turkeys good. Now, if, I mean,
there's a bunch of questions in here.
Right.
What calls are you making when he's hammering on the roost? How often are you calling to keep him around? How to call at him if you know if hens are there? What if you don't hear hen? That's like a bunch of different scenarios.
Yeah, he's got a bunch of questions there.
So I think start at the top with when a turkey's hammering on the roost, what calls are you making, and how often?
Yeah,
I would say super simply, if he's hammer on the roost, like hammering, act like double goblin, going crazy on his own, those are the days that I almost don't like touch the call much. Like, I'm really just doing what you said earlier, Joey, and I'm just letting him know that I'm there.
Yeah.
And then you can, there's a lot of things to be observed in that moment. And the other thing, that when they're hammering on the roost, I'm going to use him hammering to get as close as I possibly can, because I can constantly keep that, it's not a visual, but I can have an idea of where he's at.
Yeah.
So.
No, that's exactly, you know, what I would say, you know, just like the first question from Trent, you know, when I'm calling the birds on the roost, it's going to be probably the exact same method that, you know, I use no matter what. You know, calling to a bird on the roost, this is what I do. And I can't really think of a scenario that I would really change that tactic a whole lot. You know, and it's a safe approach. You know, you're soft calling, you're not doing anything crazy. Just soft calls. I still try to be that first hen on the ground, no matter what. You know, even if there are hens or aren't hens, or if I hear hens a half a mile away, I still want to be, you know, I want to be the first thing on his mind, you know, when he hits that ground. Like, oh, there's already a hen here somewhere, and I know where she's at because she's been reacting to me off and on, you know, since I woke up. So still, that's what I'm doing. Soft calls, tree calls. I have a wing. I won't do a fly down cackle. I've heard a couple hens do it, but at most I may just go, bark, 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 that's it, and just flap my wing. And
I'm,
you know,
too worried I'm going to mess it up.
Yeah.
With a flat on cackle.
Yeah.
Like, I'm too, it's such a like random and crazy pattern, I guess, that you do with it. I'm like, I'm like you. I might do like a little, like a half hearted one, you know?
Yeah.
It's almost kind of embarrassed. Like, I'm not here.
I think almost too, if a hen's not that fired up, I mean, she could be up on that limb and just raising cane all morning long. And I think maybe then she's more apt to do one of those full length fly down cackles that you see on the Grand National stage every year. But in every other scenario where it's just, I mean, she's sleepy, she just woke up 30 minutes ago, she may at most just do buck, buck, and set her wings and just pitch down. And I think
hear more
that's
fly
it.
Down cackles in deer season than I do.
Right.
Me too.
During actual turkey season. Usually they just kind of.
They're so loud in the fall anyway. They never shut up.
Yep. Okay, so this is a multi-part question. So I think within this same portion of it, there are times that a turkey is gobbling on the roost that I will get a little more excited. Typically for me, it's always going to be later in the morning. If I'm like, God dang, like he is still up in that tree. Like I might, the fact that he's there is telling me he's interested. You know, I might try to take control of the situation. I wouldn't say that's necessarily impatience, but it is like, okay, he's here for a reason. I need to do something right here because he does not want, I would just about guarantee you at, you know, if the sun's been up for 45 minutes, he don't want to still be in that tree. Yeah. He wants to be on the ground. And so, you know, there are those times. I think about time last year in Florida, that turkey kept flying limb to limb. There was a time in that I was like, okay, we gotta go nuts for a minute here. And it worked, you know? And so I think there are those times, but you got to read it. And I would say if you're going to error, then I would say call less, especially on the roost. If you're going to make an error and do something incorrectly, like I would rather not call enough than overcall. You know what I mean? Especially in that situation on the roost. So Joey, when you know he's got hens that are right there with him, what are you doing? Is there anything different that you're doing from what you just said?
Yeah, there comes a point where you don't focus so much on the gobbler and him responding to you. And I think you almost have to shift your focus to those hens. There's a boss hen in that. If he's got a bunch of hens with him, there's got to be a boss hen in there somewhere that's just ornery and don't want anybody else around there. And so if you're lucky enough to get a loudmouth hen in that bunch, it's the same tactic that people have talked about for years now. Let her dictate what you say. If she yelps five times, you yelp five times at the exact, you know, cadence and volume that she's doing, and just keep doing that and keep doing it. 9 times out of 10, if I hear a hen yelping in the woods, I do exactly what she does anyway, regardless, because maybe the off chance that she is that boss hen and gets things fired up and gets some excitement going around there. And I'm trying to think, it wasn't this past spring. It was a spring of 22. And I went into a place and I kind of stumbled into these turkeys. I was approaching a gobbler and I didn't see all his hens and this whole flock of turkeys. I think it was 2022 where it was kind of, the weather was real weird and they were just really bad flocked up, like way into the middle and, you know, last couple weeks of the season. So there's a huge flock of turkeys. And as soon as I realized that I was just in amongst all these hens, I just did the best I could, you know, squatted down, got up against the nearest tree, and so on, and just prayed. I don't think I even made a sound while they were up on the tree, up in the trees, because they could all see me. I could see from where I was sitting, like dang near a dozen turkeys. But once I got down on the ground, then I started calling, and I started calling to those hens, and eventually the flock came my way. And I about got busted. There was a couple of hens that got like 10 yards away from me. And I was calling like just soft enough. I guess they just didn't think I was anything off the wall or weird or anything like that. They were just curious. And I thought they were going to bust me. But they come over there and the flock just kind of just drifted my way. And I never really interacted with the gobbler that much. Like he would gobble and I would answer him. But he wouldn't respond to my calling. You know, he was just strutting and spitting and drumming and everything else. And there was jakes in there. There was just a big old flock of turkeys. And I think just interacting with those hens just made the flock drift my way just enough. And that gobbler, he started out at like 70-something yards, and then he was like 50-something yards. And then he got to 40 yards. And that last between that 50 and 40 yard mark, I think whenever his head was behind a tree, I would call like just ever so softly, you know, because his head was behind a tree. I was calling real soft. I was really hoping he couldn't pinpoint exactly where I was at. It was still kind of early season. There weren't any, wasn't any foliage on the trees. It was just wide open woods. But I just used those trees whenever he got behind one of them. I would just call a little bit in hopes that it was just enough to pique his curiosity. He would just take a couple more steps, you know, just my way. And eventually he got to that 40-yard mark, and I just waited for an opening and got him to stick his head up. But I think just interacting with the flock just piqued their curiosity. You know, their turkeys are curious anyway. If you don't bump them, they may come check it out anyway, especially if there's Jakes. I mean, Jakes are like a bunch of little teenage boys. They'll come check you out regardless. And if they come check you out, then maybe a couple of hens will come check you out and just whatever. But I think just interacting with the flock and just getting them to drift over to you.
Yeah, lots of good stuff there. I think if you had to just sum up what you said, Joey, I think imitating what you hear when you know there's other turkeys around, imitation is what do they say? Imitation is the highest form of flattery.
Right.
That gets them coming. And I think it does. I mean, I can think of so many, especially like morning time turkeys, right? Like from daylight to 10, where that was the ticket, just talking to the flock.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't necessarily a hen to tom interaction like you kind of want, you know.
Yeah,
it wasn't always, it's not always that's not always the case. Sometimes you're like, oh, I didn't even know there was a tom in there. Mm-hmm. In this group, you know.
Right.
I think it's important. Anytime you hear a hen in the woods, you just never know.
Yeah.
So flies down and goes silent. This is the last part of that question. He flies down and goes silent. I think this is kind of like a dividing line in turkey hunters. What do you do here? Do you go get breakfast at Waffle House, or what are you going to do? What I'm going to do every single time is I'm going to just, if I know that he was around there, I'm going to sit there till I have a reason not to.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There are times that I might get up and go to another spot and sit where I might know turkeys hang out frequently, or go scout, you know, if I don't know the area. But man, if a turkey's been gobbling an area, I'm going to sit there until he gives me a reason to move. Mm-hmm. Or if I have to go home, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost, you know, just pick one, pick a tactic, and it could almost work in this situation. If he's by himself, you know, and if he's been hammering on the roost, if you're interacting with him a bunch, and if he pitches down and goes silent, he may be on his way. You know, he may not have a reason to really gobble that much, or he may just be spinning drumming the whole way.
Joey, real quick, you said he's interacting with you. How do you know he's talking to you and not another bird he hears?
I think, you know, if you get him fired up with the tree calls or whatever, and like I said earlier, I try to react to him and not so much call to him in order for him to gobble. If I know where he's at, I don't need to make him gobble. Unless I just really like to hear him gobble, which of course everybody does. But, you know, he's gobbling to attract the hen to him. And so when he gobbles and you react to him, but you don't move, then I think that just entices him more to come to you. He's like, well, it's almost like the roles are reversed. You heard of hung up gobblers. Maybe you're the hung up hen. And, well, she's not going anywhere, so I'm going to have to crawl on this hen. maybe that's the case. But yeah, I think when bird gobbles, I react to him. I cut him off. You know, I'm sitting there like Johnny on the spot, either with mouth call in my mouth at the ready or my pot call or just whatever. And as soon as I hear him to hit that first note of that gobble, I go to answering him, either with just those quiet tree yelps, or if it's, you know, if the turkey's mood dictates it, you know, with some fired up cuts or whatever. And so when he gobbles back at that, like he gobbles, I react, he gobbles back, then I'm like, okay, I think I got him now. No more of those chips kind of come into my pile. And then when he starts gobbling, almost like it almost seems like there comes to a point where a turkey's gobbling in desperation. He's almost gobbling to get you to call. Like, okay, I need some reassurance that she's still there. And then maybe he's really fired up on the roost. He hits the ground. He goes silent. He goes, okay, maybe he goes, I know where that hen's at. I don't have to gobble. I'm going to march straight to her because she hadn't moved in the last 20 minutes. So maybe that's why. You could always blame the hens too. If he hits the ground and goes silent, I think it's an easy cop out, but sometimes it's actually what happens. I mean, some hen that you had no idea existed just comes in there and just totes him away. I think that's just always a possibility too.
I think there was a big difference for me. There was a huge shift whenever I learned what calls to make at different times of the day. Like, what am I going to do? And it really is based around what are you going to do if a turkey doesn't gobble, right? Like, how are you going to go about your day? This is good crap right here is what this is. How are you going to go about your day if turkey doesn't gobble at first light?
Yeah.
That is, to me, like what kind of shifted the way that I turkey hunted, in part because I went a lot of freaking days without hearing a turkey gobble. And so you kind of like, you start to learn what works. Like, it, you know, I kill more turkeys now than I did then. What are the things that it is? And I think structuring your morning, you know, and every morning is different. A rainy morning, you might call completely differently. Cloudy, hot, cold, you know, there's so many different situations. And I think you learn how to structure your morning. Okay, turkey doesn't gobble. What am I going to do? I'm going to owl hoot until 8:30, you know, 30 minutes, 45 minutes after, you know, shooting light. I don't know what time that is in the spring, 8 o'clock, who knows. I'm just going to do that. I'm going to screech. I'm going to do owl hooting until I hit a point where I'm like, okay, if there ain't a turkey that has gobbled by now, then there probably is not a turkey in here. And then I'm going to do a very, very, very abrupt, loud cut. You know what I'm saying? Like, at that point, it's plenty in the day. I'm going to do that just in case there's a turkey who is there that just didn't want to gobble to a owl, you know, and then we'll see what response, you know. And I'm not going to go through every single scenario, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Like what do you do when a turkey doesn't gobble? And that is, once you learn kind of that, I think you set yourself up. That means at first light, if what I've learned is if I'm not getting something at first light, there's another inning still to be played. Like this day is split up into segments, and turkeys typically do X, Y, and Z during X segment of the day. You know what I mean? And once you start learning that, you start setting yourself up for success, whether or not turkeys gobble or not. And I think that's been a big, huge shift, for me. But that kind of goes, Joey, into, I'm skipping a little bit, but it kind of does go into the question about locator calls. And this is something that I'm going to let you answer probably first, but I will ask the question. Is this, I don't know who it is that said this, but it says, I need locator call advice. I don't have barred owls, and only a roaming coyote or two. I tried a crow call last year, never was able to get a gobble with that. Don't know if I can use calls that aren't native species to my area, ? Basically somebody saying, hey, I ain't got owls. What's a good locator call that works? I have opinions on this, but I know, Joey, you're a little bit more versed in the different types of locator calls.
Yeah, I know of a lot of them. And I think when we talked to Shane a handful of weeks ago, I don't have the experience with locator calls as some people do. I just started carrying an owl hooter within the last handful of years. I think I carried a crow call that just collected dust because I never could get a turkey to gobble with it. Pileated woodpecker. I mean, anything could be a locator call. I mean, I'm not going to do it on the recording, but if I slap the living crap out of this desk I'm sitting at and a turkey hears it, he's liable to gobble just because it's a sharp, loud noise. And I was going to try to maybe tie this into the last question when he's gobbling on the roost or he goes silent or just whatever. And I guess you could kind of think about this as far as trying to locate turkeys. We all want to hear a turkey gobbling, but there's sometimes they just don't gobble. But one thing that started helping me find more gobblers is listening for other turkeys. You know, when you hear like a Jake do that calk or whatever that we all talk about, like calk, 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 that's more often than not a response to a gobbler. And it's a gobbler that you can't hear, but maybe he's like spitting and drumming 200 yards away and there's no way you can hear that, you know, tucked away down in some holler somewhere. But that Jake is there and he's gonna give it away. So stuff like that has just helped me find more turkeys without a locator call. Because maybe they just don't want to gobble at absolutely anything. They just want to sit down there. Maybe they do have hens with them, and they're just going to spit and drum. The spitting and drumming is essentially doing the same thing that a gobble does, just on, you know, much lower frequency. It's doing the same thing, just at a whisper, I guess.
Have you ever heard of anybody trying to replicate a spit and drum sound?
I was just thinking that in the last handful of days, like, I'm going to try that this year.
Could you carry like a subwoofer around? Like,
well, no, I think, I don't know. I mean, I don't really know. I need to record myself, I guess, to see how it would sound, but I would wonder if that would like actually work. I don't know. Maybe it would work the same, like as maybe a gobble tube, because like we just said, the spitting drum's doing the same thing as a gobble, just, you know, at a much softer, you know, volume.
You couldn't use like a speaker, because you can't do that. That's against the law, I think. It would be an electronic call, I would think, at that point.
I think if you just hum, you can do the drum.
That was pretty good.
Yeah, but it's a deeper frequency. It's a frequency thing. You feel that sound carries for them very, very far.
Yeah.
That lower frequency.
Yeah, like I said,
I mean, surely we're not the first people that have thought about this.
I can't imagine. I'm not that innovative.
No. But what if we were the first people to think about this?
We won't be
able to. First SoCo spitting drum call.
We just gave away. This is why we'll never be rich. We give away all of our ideas on the podcast.
Greg's going to add the M2 turkey drum. And it's going to be one of those, like those, you remember those cloud puffers where you pull on it and it goes boom and it pushes the air out there? There's going to be dudes out there just going boom.
Yeah. Those little turnover.
Yeah. Primo's can, but it's a drum.
I think when it comes to locator calls, I have never been anywhere that the screech did not work. Mm-hmm. And I would do it anywhere. Honestly, I don't know. Like, I don't really look up to see if what species of owls are in the places that I hunt, but a screech owl mm-hmm. works pretty much every time. And again, that's another thing that screech is something that has, dude, it freaking works.
Yeah.
Like, because it's just loud, man, and it carries. Mm-hmm. And it takes some practice to do it. It's kind of like I sing, so it's more related to singing to hit the note than it is like yelling.
Mariah Carey, I bet, could locate the living crap out of turkey.
What if I try? That's what I'm going to try to do. I'm going to try to come up with
a Christmas song that she sings, where she starts off with that really high pitched angelic.
All I want for Christmas.
All I want for Christmas is you.
Yep. That's electronic doll waltz out there with a Mariah Carey Christmas CD.
I'll come running. I hear that in the woods.
You have like the different singers. This is the Freddie Mercury screech owl.
And we're all laughing. We're going to be on a video one day talking about that. And you're going to do that. And like 80 yards away, he's going to go,
just light it up. I can't get my voice high enough to do a screech. I just can't.
Do a run at the end of it.
Yeah. One thing I am going to try this year, since you can do it with a mouth call, I'm going to bugle it at them and just see what happens. I may try to do that preseason scouting.
In North Dakota, turkeys would gobble at the elk bugling.
That's
100%.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Like that was a real thing. Turkeys were gobbling at the elk.
Yeah. Like, the calls that I have, you know, I do kikis and that kind of stuff on them anyway. So it's real easy to get that really high pitch, mm-hmm. you know, whatever. I won't do it here in the hotel room, but it's not that hard to do. I mean, you're not going to enter an elk calling contest with, you know, anything like that. But, man, it's got to work. It's got to work. Even on turkeys that have never fathomed what an elk, you know, eat like thousands of miles from where an elk would be. You know, we have elk in East Tennessee, but still, I mean, the turkeys in Middle Tennessee have zero clue elk exist on this planet. But it's just a sharp, loud noise. And it's got to make a turkey gobble. Another one I wanted to try too. I have no idea if this will actually work, but I've wanted to try a quail, like a Bob White quail whistle. And I've got one. It's an old Haydell's quail whistle, but it's just a loud, loud whistle. And I want to try it too. And it's smaller than my finger. It's like 2/3 the size of my finger. Like I could put it in my pocket. I mean, It's got to work too. There's at least one turkey out there that'll gobble at a quail.
I would say just to whoever asked this question about the owl, I wouldn't worry about what's in your area. Honestly, like personally,
yeah.
I would go anywhere and I would learn. This is, I guess, could be a plug for the M2 vest, but it's a very minimalist vest. This year, I'm carrying super. Like hardly any calls. Like I'm going to carry my copper call from Honeycomb. I'm going to carry two mouth calls.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to be using the owl hoot with my natural voice screech and then the crow call with my voice as well. I feel like the crow and the owl both natural voiced. If you can learn how to do that, I've noticed an uptick of the amount of gobbles that I've been able to strike, since I started doing that.
So I just want to point out, the whole, I don't have owls and I don't have pileated woodpeckers comment was what threw me because I was trying to figure out one of our patrons we have out west. And to my knowledge, we don't have anybody, anywhere in the U.S. that doesn't have both of those species. So whether you hear them or not, it wouldn't necessarily be a non-native noise. I think those turkeys have probably heard it. Even if you haven't, they've heard an owl owl gobble. I've always done that. An owl hoot and a pileated woodpecker scream at whatever it is it sees. So I would definitely run with those. I think it's probably also kind of conditional. I think birds probably get conditioned to the noises. Mm-hmm. And so my advice is buy a bunch of them and go use them until you figure out which ones work for you. I don't take a crow call. Now, if I go to Missouri or Iowa, I'll probably end up taking one because that might be the golden ticket and I'll figure it out pretty quick. But at least for mountain birds in North Georgia and for the turkeys we have pretty much everywhere from there to here in Florida, that owl call is dynamite. Early on, and then that pileated woodpecker and hawk, that mm-hmm. red-tailed hawk, it when it works, it's just over and over and over again. And I had a hell of a tussle with a mountain bird that we had to make a big move on. He had this bench sitting on the tip of this mountain, and I mean like the tip of this mountain. There was just rock. And the bench was about 80 yards beneath that. And he would not leave that bench. And he's just going back and forth, back and forth. And when he left and faced away from us, we bombed off the edge where we were, to where he didn't have line of sight, made a big J hook around this mountain, climbed the other side. And just to make sure he hadn't left, I just hit that hawk. You'd hear him on the other side. We'd go another 50 or so yards. We'd be winded. And he'd just fire off over and over again. And we ended up getting within so close to that bird, I didn't even yelp once. But he heard the footsteps in the leaves. And as we sat down, he popped his head over to look at us. And obviously, he started putting and took off. We didn't even have a chance to shoot him during that. But I've since tried, whenever they're talking on the roost or just talking in general, if I can get a shot gobble, I'm going to milk that until he quits going at it, because I want to get as close as I can before he starts thinking turkey.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, at this point, anything loud could be the locator call that works that day. And then the very next day, no turkey could care anything about it. So it goes back to that age old answer. It just depends. Mm-hmm. And there just comes a point where, yeah, I mean, you could go through a dozen locator calls if you have them in your vest, and none of them could work that day. And I've yet to find a locator call that is, 100%. I mean, nothing's 100%, but you know what I mean? Like I have yet to find a tried and true locator call for myself, I guess is what I'm saying.
Joey, learn how to do the owl screech.
I need some voice lessons, apparently, because I'll be out there screeching like Barry White.
The next question that I was going to say was what calls for a beginner. That's one of those on there, and I would tell every beginner to, like, even if you can't do a screech, like, sit, listen, try to replicate an owl, like the laugh, the hoot, the whole thing. Try to do it. I can remember one day where it kind of clicked for me. I was out on my kayak bass fishing, and there was like four owls that just got all around me. And I turned on my phone and started recording and starting just trying to replicate. You know what I mean? And you can tell in that video, you can hear a progression, a change. I mean, I sat there for 35, 45 minutes just back and forth to these owls, just trying to get as close as I possibly could. And I end up calling more owls to me than anything, which is great. Like, I like that, because if I can get the owls fired up, then I can stop, know, like I don't have to do that anymore. I can get the owls fired up and then just sit there and enjoy the morning. And so I would tell every beginner, just try to do that. Just try.
Yeah.
Because that is going to, like, try to make it easy on yourself. It's so much easier when you don't have to carry calls into the woods. I wish I could do a natural voice yelp, because I would probably do that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You can always carry your voice into the woods.
Yeah.
So, but in addition to that, some other calls, I kind of already mentioned that, whatever, you know, the stuff that I'm using, I'm going to use these two calls and the copper from Honeycomb. And I would almost say that would be what a beginner should do. Start simple.
Yeah.
Just get a couple calls and try to learn them. Start simple. You guys have any suggestions there?
The locator calls is actually an excellent point. And I think it's something that I never really thought about it. I didn't think about it when I saw this question. I didn't think about a locator call. But it's genius, because to me, the hardest part is finding dad-blamed turkeys. And if you can just get the things to gobble, then obviously they're a lot easier to find.
Yep.
And once you get in amongst of them and get to interacting with them, they just teach you so much. I mean, they could teach you themselves. But yeah, the hardest part's finding them. So kudos to you, Parker. That was absolutely genius. Like, here, find the stupid turkey first and then try to call to him. But here's how you here's the first call you need to make. You need to make the first call that's going to make him appear. So, no, but as far as turkey calls, physical turkey calls, yeah, pot calls, I think those are easier and better than box calls. I don't even carry a box call anymore, but any kind of pot call, I think the push button calls, I mean, if you doctor one of those things up, it's easy to run. There's all kinds of calls out there.
I would say Turkey Tech would be a very wise thing.
Yep.
For anybody who's a beginner, just speaking of beginners and calling, mm-hmm. get Turkey Tech when it comes to replication and trying to mimic a sound. It's all right there. You can listen to it. I was doing it today while I was working. Get that. I think there is a paid version, but more important than the type of calls is like just learning what the sound is that you're trying to make. And then you'll figure out which calls you do best on.
Yep. Yeah. Figure out what you can do. I mean, we've said it before. You don't have to be Dave Owens every time you go into the woods. You just have to speak the language roughly. And if you can make a cluck, if a cluck is the only thing you can remotely sound like a turkey, then do clucks. I mean, you can call in a crap ton of birds just by clucking to them. Mm-hmm. If you're one of those lucky individuals where you can purr right off the bat, you know, with whatever call, then do that. I don't know. Just find what you can do the best and just run with it. And you'll get better at other things eventually. It's just going to take time.
I think what makes David Owens special isn't his calling ability. It's what he does to be in the woods all the time. Because there's a lot of tremendous turkey callers who don't have the time that Dave Owens has. And if you listen to him on podcast, he'll tell you more than anything. If he had to boil it down to one call, it would be a Yelp. And the number one reason why he kills birds is because he's got 7-8 days to hunt those birds. And he's going to be there when they're willing to play the game. And that's not to say he's not an excellent turkey call caller. Because, I mean, I'd get drugged through the streets if I tried to insinuate that, and I'm not. I'm just saying I think what makes him exceptional is the amount of time he's managed to carve out to go.
Dave's also extremely humble on podcasts because time is a very easy thing to say for a guy like Dave. You know, I got time. Dave's doing it every freaking day.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like going
to killing 90 days a year almost.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know, but I'm saying like the time aspect, he would be killing more turkeys than everybody even if he didn't have the time because he is extremely efficient in the woods. He is incredibly efficient in the woods.
But at that point, what he would do well is being wildly efficient, right? Because if you give him Joey and I schedule, and I'm just saying right now, I think the most amazing thing he does is how he builds his life to where he can be out there for 90 days. I think I would argue that if you gave anybody the ability to hunt every day of the season with just a slate call, a brand new hunter, they're probably going to pull the trigger once. I mean, I pretty well proved that in 2020.
I'm pretty well am living freaking
and when I look back now going into year four, I'm like, dude, I had no right to kill those birds in 2020, but I was there when they wanted to die. My schedule allowed it.
You also live in a turkey hunting, like in a place that's good, has good turkey hunting.
Yeah.
Right.
I lived in
Florida.
Kentucky,
in general is a good turkey state. Like it really is.
Sure.
It's not a secret. Like you live in a place where there's turkeys. If you live in a place where there's turkeys, time can do wonders for you. But for a lot of people, talking about public land hunters, in states, you know, I think Tennessee is a good state. I think even Alabama can be good in places. It can be very good in places. Tennessee is the same. Tennessee can be good in places. There's parts of Tennessee that there are guys who are sitting there twiddling their thumbs, trying to figure out how this fifth year of turkey hunting, they're going to kill their first turkey.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is in turkey hunting is so different depending on which, like the level of difficulty in turkey hunting can be like almost like elementary level.
It's a very wide spectrum.
Yeah, it's a huge spectrum. Yep. And then there's some places where, my goodness, a turkey seems like every gobbler's got a PhD, mm-hmm. you know? And so it's hard to answer some of these questions and say like, you know, and this isn't even a question necessarily that we're talking about. We're talking about, is time the most effective thing? And I don't think it is. And we're going to get more into this later in the season. We've been kind of talking a little bit about like this sixth sense of turkey hunting, like what makes a great turkey hunter. But I think there's something else in there that does actually make a great turkey hunter. I don't think, Walt, that it is always just time. I'm not saying you're, but I think maybe I am saying that you said that.
That sure sounds like it, buddy.
Walt admitted to be a shining example of exactly what he was talking about. He had all season to hunt and pulled the trigger once. Twice. Sorry.
Walt tagged out that first year.
Yeah. I think that's just further proof because I really had no idea what I was doing. I had a good mentor, but sorry, Parker, go ahead. After you slandered me, I had to stand up. Go ahead.
No, I wasn't slandering you on purpose.
I know.
I wasn't saying, but I think I hear that a lot. You know, if you are a part of Facebook groups, you see this question asked, what are things that I need to do to be a good turkey hunter? Woodsmanship. That's what you're always, woodsmanship, time, just time. People, there's these like easy cop out answers that I think that Dave Owens specifically, since that's who we were talking about, like there is a like, what makes him a great turkey hunter? There's something else. It's not just time. It's not just patience. It's not just good calling. There's this like ability to read a turkey. There are people that have the same thing with deer. There's quarterbacks in the NFL that are the same way with a football. There's just this sense, you know, this like superhuman sense. But can it be taught? Like, is it something that can be taught? Is it something like, is it a natural thing? Can we identify it? You know, I don't know. Maybe one day.
I won't drag this out any more than it needs to be, but I think it's all of those things that you just listed. And I think like people like Dave Owens and, you know, Shane Simpson, whoever else that we want to put into this category of excellent turkey hunters that maybe have more time than we do and, you know, whatever else, those people are just wired differently. Because I think about myself, if I had 90 days to turkey hunt, could I turkey hunt all 90 of those days? Like, would I get up every morning and turkey hunt? I honestly don't think that I would, because at some point, like, I get really burnt out really easy. And I've talked about it before. There's a reason that I am not interested in doing that for the 49, you know, state U.S. Super Slam. Eventually it would turn into work for me and I would just feel obligated that I had to go do this. And there are people just like Dave Owens who can get up 90 days in a row, probably 3, 2, 3, 4 o'clock, you know, whatever time of year it is, and just turkey hunt all day long. And I would have I am going to be honest and say I probably could not do that. And I think those people are just cut from a different cloth. They just take what we perceive as, you know, we're addicted to turkey hunting, can't live without it, blah, blah, blah. Those people are on another level that I cannot even fathom about turkey hunting.
They got the turkey tism.
They got the touch of the tism. You know, what flavor of autism did you get? I can hunt a 20-pound bird 90 days in a row and not be tired of it.
Give me that one. I want that one, and I want the medication for it.
Exactly.
I don't want the medication for it. No, just let it run rampant. Yeah. I think
I think to answer Budding's question, I've been thinking about listening to you guys just to kind of put my little two cents out there. When I think about a beginner hunter, I think about somebody who's trying to spend a bunch of money, trying to figure this out. They bought a vest, things like that. So I'm going to come at this from like a budgetary conscious, but also wildly effective and easy to immediately start using. So I think you go with an alcohol and I think you go with a slate. You go with a slate pot call because even my son, every once in a while makes a good turkey noise on that slate and he's, you know, about to turn three. Right. So I think with a little bit of YouTube and let's say 5 hours of practice time, you ought to be able to purr. You ought to be able to get some nice tree yelps out of that thing. Candidly, by the time the bird can see you in the deep south, Budding's hunting in Alabama, by the time that's the case, you probably should not be, you know, having the call in your hand anyways, right? So don't worry about closing the birds. And so if you combine what we said earlier with the ability to locate him and make him a better move, not just a move, but a better move using the locator call, then some soft calling on a slate that just sounds super turkey. There's something about a slate call that just sounds just really great for those soft calls. I think that'd be deadly for somebody. If you're thinking about getting into it, you can get both of those for under $100. Like great slate and a great owl call for under $100.
Yeah, and as far as like when to set that call down, that was actually one of Jake Kushner's questions. His the locator call question was actually his question. It was just under the bullet points. It was just like his second question.
Oh, I see that now. Yep.
But anyway, yeah. When is it best to not call or stop calling, or whatever? I think you just described it perfectly to me. If you're just using a slate call and if you're scared of that bird popping out of nowhere and seeing you, then you probably need to stop calling. That, I don't know, that's almost as cut and dry as you can get for me. If you're scared for that bird to see you call.
If you're asking the question, I would say yeah. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because I'm not going to ask that question. Right? Because I think there's a point. I think there is a point where that's not a one answer question.
Yeah.
You know, like there's a point for me where like, you know, I might call to him sometimes when he's still 20 feet away.
Oh,
you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like that might be a thing now, but when I didn't know better, like it would, I think that's a great gauge. Like if I'm worried that he's going to spook, if I get up right now, then I'm not going to call.
Right. Right.
Like if you have that fear, then maybe stop calling until you have a reason to leave.
Feel his call in your eyeballs. Put it down.
Yeah. If you could feel the drum, then you probably don't need to call anymore. But I mean,
you can see him coming. Stop calling.
Right. If you can see his head, don't call at him. That's almost the one rule I have. If I can see his head and he can see my position, I'm not going to call at him unless I'm going to try to get him to stick his head up.
But we have to acknowledge the walking part too. Like if you can hear him walking towards you, that's just as good as, you know, hearing him
coming.
Yeah.
And I think I'm hard headed and stubborn and I just love calling at turkey. So I just like never stop calling. But I think I've talked about this before, but if you do that really soft stuff, the little feeding stuff, that's not going to booger anything. I think you can call as much as you want to. Mm-hmm. I mean, a turkey just doesn't just stop raking in the leaves, you know, because it hears, you know, another turkey coming. It's just going to keep raking in the leaves. Like if you feel like you have to do anything, like when my ADD flares up really bad and I have to be doing something, just scratching the dad blame leaves. You're still calling turkeys. You're just, you know, you're just not going to bump them.
Yeah. So, I think most people call because it's fun to make the noise.
Yeah, absolutely. Know? It is.
It's fun to do it. But like you said, I think learning how to do a soft call
it's like a happy meeting.
Curve your ADD a little bit.
It scratches your itch and it works. It doesn't do any harm. Yeah.
And it also imitates a turkey well.
Yep.
You know, once you learn how to do it, you got to learn how to do it first. But I would say soft calling definitely goes into this last question from, Cody. About how to make a mouth call last longer than a day. You're doing something wrong. That's That's the, there's really, not, I don't think there's a whole lot of how-tos about this because most people
I think every don't how-to do that. Is actually about this because whatever you're doing, no one else in the world is doing.
No one is doing that.
I was left speechless when this discussion started on Discord. People a little bit of context. It essentially started just like this. He asked, how do I make a mouth call last like more than a day or something? And I think people were just so flabbergasted. I've never heard of such. Like, I've never heard of somebody like just burning through a mouth call that it just disintegrated after a day. Like, I don't know. For all I know, dude's teeth could make keys. I mean, I don't know. Is he just like, does he just have wood chipper for a mouth and just destroying these mouth calls?
I think he's from East Kentucky.
Oh, yeah. So there's no telling. Yeah. I mean, I have no idea.
Like, Cody in Eastern Kentucky?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah,
he Kentucky definitely, somewhere. Yeah, but yeah,
it's a teeth thing. That's all it is. We narrowed it down.
Yeah, that's it. That's the answer. But I can't imagine, like, what? We just need to get, I don't think he's on Polo, is he?
No, he's not.
No, he's not on Polo. Not. We got to get some kind of footage of him running a mouth call. Like, is he just, I've no idea. Like, I'm still flabbergasted. I have zero clue what this man does to a mouth call to just chew it up. I've nothing.
And he says it's not the tape coming apart. The entire thing falls apart. Like, and I asked him, I was like, how long is it sitting in your mouth? Because my thinking was, Daniel told me year two, I think he said, or last year or something. He's like, hey, don't let that mouth call sit in your mouth for too long because the tape will separate. And then you start getting that like noise that builds up. And so that's what I'm thinking about. I'm like, hey, dude, you know, because it's easy to just tuck that thing in the corner of your mouth, have a conversation, and just keep practicing on it, which is what I used to do. And he's like, nah, dog, it just it freaking blows apart, I guess.
He's doing that with braces.
He's got a grill. He's got a gold grill he's not telling us about.
I mean, golly. Dude.
I literally have no answer to that. I have no idea what the man is doing. No idea.
Learn to soft call.
Just soft call. That's got to let you.
Like, if I had to just answer the question and somebody had a gun to my head, answer this question, call softer.
Yeah. Switch to a pop call, dude.
Slate call, I was about to say.
I don't know.
Oh, my goodness.
Golly.
Man, that was a lot of fun, though. Those some great questions in there.
Yeah, I mean, this, like I said, this is one of my favorite turkey hunting episodes to listen to, like anything like this. Like, tell me how I can kill more turkeys. I love hearing stories, but man, just tell me I can kill a few more turkeys and I'll be tickled to death.
Yep.
Yeah, man.
I'm ready. It's going to be here quick. Get your honeydews done, boys. Yep. I was out there pulling weeds and trimming back things that had died from the frost, and I got the shed all done up, and now I got to do some more flower beds, get them done, because you don't want to be doing it during the season.
Yeah, I fixed the roof on my shed the other day, and my body is still hurting from it.
Yeah.
I got my wife doing all that crap. You boys can have fun with it.
All right, then.
Okay. All right, boys. Well, let's take a fork in this. We're sitting at an hour and a half, and hopefully by now everybody is as fired up as we are. And if not, we got more coming. We're going to get you fired up. It's, you know what's cool about seeing the Patreon community, Parker? I don't know if you saw this last year. Did you see the constant tick of people who didn't turkey hunt? They took a crap on it. Turkey hunting stupid old ditch pigeons. And then suddenly you just started to see them in the woods out there with some honeycomb calls, and you know, they're out there killing birds.
Oh, bro. When somebody says, oh no, I don't care about no turkey, I just assume like, oh, okay. You haven't ever been.
I don't argue with them anymore. Yeah, you're right. Deer hunting's better.
Yeah, I guess there's that. But I mean, I just, if somebody says that to me, like, I'm like, it's just kind of one of those, like, well, you just ain't been the right way. That's all there is to it. Because turkey hunting the way that,
it's just fun, your man. Opinion, man.
Yeah, I mean, it's a free country. You can be wrong if you want to.
Yeah, you're free to be wrong.
All right, well, folks. Oh, that's me. Okay. All right. Sorry. Little discombobulated there. Well, guys, I appreciate y'all tuning in this far. I appreciate special shout out to the patrons who gave us these questions. We're going to probably do this again because I enjoyed the hell out of it, and I could see us doing this for deer season as well. Yeah. Joey probably will just be a listener at that point. I don't think he has any desire to be on that podcast.
I may be asking questions.
Hey, come on. Any hoodles. Until next time, guys, get outside and enjoy the great outdoors. Oh, yeah, I said it.